next on the DVD marquee. And a 1, 2, 3.
We are dream girls, boys, we'll make it happy. Yeah, we are dream girls, boys, we'll always care.
Hey. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition, an all singing, all dancing, all talking edition of the DVD marquee. And back with me in the studio today is Stan Williams. Welcome back, Stan.
Is it all singing or all talking?
It's probably going to be all talking.
If it's all singing, I'm out of here.
All right. Well, anyway, we are here to discuss the Showstopper, the two-disc Showstopper edition of Dreamgirls, the Golden Globe winner for Best Picture, and also the film that won awards for Eddie Murphy and Jennifer Hudson, Golden Globe and Oscar, respectively. And around Christmas time, when I first contemplated going to see this movie, I talked to Stan about it, and much to my surprise, he actually wanted to go. Because I don't really look at you as being the musical kind of guy. I look at you as being like the Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Spider-Man, all that kind of thing kind of guy, you know? So what attracted you to going to this movie?
I didn't want to go. You wanted to see it.
Well, I picked it out, yeah, but no. Just much to my surprise, you wanted to go. Now, I know you're not a musical, singing, dancing kind of guy.
Why do you say that?
Well, because all these years, I feel like I still don't know you.
No, I honestly don't know why you would think that.
Yeah,
I like all sorts of movies. A movie is a movie, regardless whether or not it's a musical, a science fiction film. I don't care. I'm interested in all sorts of stuff.
I was up for this movie, unlike any musical I'd seen in a long, long time, because I was raised on this stuff. You know, when I was growing up, when I was a child, back in the 1960s, it was a period in which you could hear every kind of music on the radio and on one station to boot. And also, that rubbed off on people like my brother Kenny. I have many pleasant childhood memories of going over to my grandmother's house, and he would have his friends over from high school, and they would be listening to everything from Paul Revere and the Raiders to Sam and Dave. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, I felt the story. I knew about the story. And just, you know, they can say, oh, it's not about the Supremes until they're blue in the face, but we know it is. So it had, you know, a slightly different take on it, a couple of developments that kind of surprised me that we won't give away. But this is essentially a homage to not only the Supremes, but Motown Records.
Yeah, I would have to say, in real life, I do not think Diana Ross was that good with a lightsaber.
Is that in the deleted scenes? I think it was. But anyway, you know, I've been hearing about this musical for, you know, going on 25 years, and I've never had a chance to see the Broadway production or even a traveling version of it, you know, the Broadway Theater League type recreation or off-Broadway version. Mm-hmm. But the story just appealed to me, and even though I'd only heard like one song from it for the last 25 years, it was a hell of a song. Of course, we're talking about Jennifer Holliday's, and I'm telling you, I'm not going, but that was, you know, just probably one of the best vocals ever laid down on tape in a recording studio. So based on the reputation and the fact that, you know, I didn't know how deep they were going to get into the storyline as far as the record industry and the certain shady characters that you have to deal with and all that. But I found that it was not only successful as a musical, which it mostly is, but there's also a very compelling storyline. I felt that you really got into the minds of these characters. You know, you've got all different kinds. You got Jimmy Foxx's character, which is kind of like the Berry Gordy-ish, you know, character, the mover and shaker, the father figure, more than a father figure in time. You also have Eddie Murphy's character, which a lot of people said was based on James Brown, but I found him to be more like Wilson Pickett myself. And going back and looking at this again, do you think that maybe the Academy made a mistake? Maybe Alan Arkin shouldn't have won for Little Miss Sunshine?
I don't know. Well, I don't know necessarily about that, but I don't know. Looking at it again, I think it was a case where I'm not saying anything bad about his performance at all. He's fine in the movie, but I do think maybe there was a little bit of that. here's Eddie Murphy, here's a comedian, here's something we haven't seen him in. We haven't seen him in something like this. Hey, let's nominate him for an Oscar. Wouldn't that be cool?
But I was going back and looking at the extended version of Fake Your Way to the Top, and the charisma and the passion and the soul that he put into that was just, you know. When you're coming down.
I had an odd reaction to this movie because watching it on a technical level, on pretty much every level, it's very well done. Mm-hmm. The choreography, the cinematography, the acting, the direction, the costumes, the songs, the singing. But something was just missing for me. It had everything except that one little thing that causes that chemical reaction, you know, in your brain.
Right.
That really makes you connect to a movie. And it somehow, it just lacked that for me.
I'm glad that you were able to see its virtues. But maybe since I'm the big music fan here, you know, big on the history, maybe have a slightly more better appreciation for the time period and all the characters involved.
It's not a bad movie by any means. It's one of those movies where after you see it, you're like, why didn't I like that more? You know, and yeah. I can't figure that out. And I mean, obviously, the story has to be told this way. I'm sure the Broadway show was like this. You know, it's musical sequence after musical sequence after musical sequence. And after a while, I think that kind of wears on you just a little bit, you know. As enjoyable as each individual segment is, I don't know if it ever really adds up to a great whole.
But I think we both can agree on Jennifer Hudson. Never acted before in her life. So natural against the lights of Beyonce and Eddie Murphy and Jamie Foxx. Mm-hmm. Just a heck of a performance, and just, you know, there's been some dissension over whether, okay, a lot of people are talking about that infamous song that we talked about a few minutes ago, and I'm telling you, I'm not going, you know. I think that she did more than that in this movie. I think she proved herself as an actress, and she did more than one song in the film. I Am Changing is another great song. A remarkable turnaround from having Simon Cowell diss her the way that he did on American Idol, and then all of a sudden just come back, you know, from, you know, just most people on Idol, you know, once they leave, if they're not amongst the top two, top three, top four, you know, you're pretty much history and you're resigned to the lights of county fairs the rest of your life, you mm-hmm. know. But she took the bull by the horn and just really just nailed it, you know. And it's just it's a terrific performance.
How far along did she get? I never watched American Idol. How far along did she get?
If I'm not mistaken, I think she was either number 6 or number 5.
Okay.
And you know, usually those folks wind up, you know, doing stuff on E or or other cable channels or something, and they just pretty much vanish into relative obscurity. So this is a real success story, and I think it's one of the main drawing cards of this movie. For people who haven't seen it yet, I think people are going to be really knocked out by her performance. And on a musical note, I'm really looking forward to her first album, which is supposed to be coming out, I think, sometime this summer. So whether or not this will be like a one-shot, I guess only time will tell. But Jennifer Hudson, you know, made this movie for me.
She really is good. I was surprised. Again, like I said, I've never really watched American Idol, but I'm surprised to hear that, you know, that she never really has acted before.
Right. Yeah, it's a great accomplishment, and it's a great American dream kind of success story. And it doesn't seem to have gone to her head. You know, that's another thing that I really found fascinating and encouraging. And speaking of which, that kind of leads us to the extras on this disc. My God.
Everything is on this disc. Eddie Murphy's dental records are on this disc. This disc has an obscene amount of extras.
Maybe a little too much, but you know what? I'd rather it be a little too much than nothing at all, because, you know, in the period that we've done the show together, Stan, how many times have we gone, well, that wasn't long enough, or gosh, I wish they would have done
Let's put it this way. An episode of CSI is less detailed.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And the documentary that kicks off Disc 2, Building the Dream, I mean, talk about a detailed behind-the-scenes look from conception to the premiere. I mean, it's just, no stone is left unturned. It's fantastic.
If you walk away from this disc having any other questions about this movie, seek help.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can give him Bill Condon's phone number. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get a little bit of background about the play and how it was a groundbreaker in terms of staging and quite a big influence on a lot of the musicals that followed with the revolving stages and all that.
You get screen tests, schematics, right. Deleted scenes, extended scenes, a featurette on editing, a featurette on choreography, a featurette right. on the fashion design.
The Listen music video for all you Beyonce fans out there.
Uh-huh.
And the trailer for Norbit. But some other highlights of that documentary, I'll tell you, I've got to give credit to this guy. His name is Keith Clark. He directed and put this thing together, and this is the kind of featurette that needs to be on every disc for a film like this. And what about that sequence where you've got one of the set designers building these little bitty models, and he has a camera about the size of a pinky ring or something, mm-hmm. and then dipping it inside and taking pictures of it? I mean, my God, you know, I mean, that's almost like Star Wars caliber type work.
This has got to be the most extensive disc I've seen. I really don't know what to compare it to. What would you compare this disc to? Maybe Lord of the Rings?
Well, I don't think it's that extensive, you know. We didn't get a commentary track with 40 people on it, but I think after 2 hours, there's no question left unanswered. But there were a lot of things in it that just I found really fascinating and really cool, like Beyonce hiring her own crew to shoot her own screen test. I mean, here we have one of the most popular recording artists in the world, you know, has sold millions of records. She could have, you know, just gone, I'll have my people talk to your people, blah, blah, blah. But she really wanted this role and wanted to prove herself and how serious she was about it. You know, she said it's her dream role, and to take it upon herself to do that, I thought that was really cool.
I remember when they told me, you're not going to just get this movie. You're going to have to do a screen test. And I was very happy to do a screen test because I actually was like, I want them to know that I can do this. There's no doubt about it. I'm ready.
Anyway, have we left anything out? I don't think we've left anything out. I mean, folks, if you love this movie,
I'm sure we've left a lot out, because they cover every single aspect of the production of this movie.
Yeah, true.
I'm sure somewhere on disc 2 there's a list of what the crew had for lunch every day and the nutritional information. But my God, there's a lot of stuff on this disc.
Yeah, it's definitely the kind of content that I wish, again, I cannot stress enough, every movie needs to have a documentary like Building the Dream on here. And it is worth shelling out the extra $5 or $6, especially if you can get it on sale right now at the time of this podcast. It's really outstanding.
Yeah, if you're a fan of this movie, you're going to be in heaven, and for days and days and days.
And it sounds great. It sounds just as good as it did in the theater. Colors just really stand out. I mean, it's a mind blower, you know.
It's
even
pretty.
If you're not a big fan of, say, musicals, I think you're going to walk away impressed. So I have to say, I know we've got another 6.5 months to go, but this is the best DVD I've seen so far in 2007. So definitely pick it up. We want to thank the folks at Paramount and DreamWorks for supplying us with a copy of Dreamgirls, the 2-disc Showstopper edition, available now. And on that note, Stan, thank you very much for coming aboard for this all singing, all dancing, all talking edition of the DVD Marquee.
Where was the singing part?
Anyway, folks, next time on our show, we will be featuring a two-part, the first of a two-part conversation I had earlier this year with Warner Brother Home Video catalog genius, Mr. George Feltenstein. I had a chance to talk to George back in late February, and we talked about the plans that he has for some really great special editions coming out later in the year. Some of them have already made their way out. And we'll also get extensive background into his career. And it's a very fascinating chat. I had a wonderful time, and I'm really looking forward to finally getting this on the air for you guys for our next show. So until then, we're Stan Williams. I'm Jeffrey Rosato. Thank you so much for listening to another edition of the DVD Marquee. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. We'll see you next time. All right, here we go. Intro, and I just want to make sure my pants were zipped. In 3, 2, I know we're on the radio, but, you know, 3, 2, 1. What you can't see won't hurt you. Okay, in 3, 2, hit me now. 3, 2, 1. But I was going back and looking at the extended version of Fake Your Way to the Top, and the charisma and the passion and the soul that he put into that was just, you know, we've never really thought of Eddie Murphy as a great singer, despite, you know, that great mid-80s classic Party All the Time. And
name me one other singer who could lament the partying of Name me one other singer who could lament the continual partying of his girlfriend with half the raw emotion that Eddie Murphy did in the 80s. Name one, now! Exactly. I think that's what this was. I think this Oscar nomination was a great belated thank you for Party All the Time.
I think so too, yeah. And a tip of the... I don't know if I'll use it. No, but it's definitely outtake material. Okay, if you say so. Anyway, enough about that. And we love you, Rick James, wherever you are.